This is Fresh Air. An Errol Morris film is distinguished by its style and subject matter. His first film, Gates of Heaven, was about two pet cemeteries in Northern California. Vernon, Florida, was a portrait of a small town. It featured, among other things, a couple who collected sand. In both films, Morris relied on people talking, uninterrupted. The result was both entertaining and off-putting. Morris's best-known film is The Thin Blue Line. It's the story of Randall Adams, a man wrongly accused of murder, and it's credited with helping to get Adams released from prison. The film combines interviews with stylized reenactments, accompanied by a haunting Philip Glass score. Morris's new film takes on an unlikely interview subject, physicist Stephen Hawking. The film is based on Hawking's best-selling book, A Brief History of Time. Hawking is afflicted with a degenerative muscle disease called ALS. He can't talk and has movement in just a few fingers. His speech is processed through a computer. The film opens with the tap-tap sound of Hawking using his computer. Then we hear his synthesized voice. Hawking serves as the narrator throughout the film.
Which came first? The chicken or the egg? Did the universe have a beginning? And if so, what happened before then? Where did the universe come from? And where is it going?
I asked Errol Morris to describe his first meeting with Stephen Hawking.
When you first are introduced to Stephen, it's really hard to know how to carry on a conversation. Stephen speaks very, very slowly. In fact, he has no voice at all, as we normally understand it. He speaks with a voice synthesizer. So you have to wait for him to write out sentences on a computer. He has very, very limited movement. In fact, he can move just three fingers on each hand. And with those three fingers, he operates a clicker, essentially an on and off switch, picks out words on a computer screen, assembles those words, and when he has composed a sentence or several sentences, those sentences can be spoken using this artificial voice, this voice synthesizer.
How long does it take for him to put several sentences together?
A long time, a matter of 2-3 minutes. And in fact, while you're sitting there, the pauses can seem almost interminable. When you first meet him, you sit opposite him, so you can't see his computer screen while he's writing. So you're looking at him, he's clicking away, and after a period of time passes, he finally speaks. After I got to know him better, it was possible to sit next to him and look at the computer screen while he was writing.
Well, I noticed that you began, first we hear his computerized voice. And then it begins with an extreme close-up into his eyes. And very slowly, we begin, you show us his body. And by the time that there's a full shot of him in his office, in his chair, with his computer, and you begin to associate this voice with a body, it's still shocking to see how immobilized he truly is. Did you get used to that as a filmmaker?
I don't think that you ever get completely used to it, but you become used to Stephen Hawking certainly as a person. And Stephen is a person who I like very, very much. It was a great privilege to be able to work with him, but it was also an enjoyable experience. He's funny. He is fun to be with. The answer is yes, it is something that you get used to. And it can be shocking to people at first. Stephen is as incapacitated as a person really can be.
The only real movement we see are just the almost imperceptible flutter of his fingers.
The movement of three fingers on each hand, the limited movement of his head from one side of the chair to the other. He can chew food with great difficulty. But aside from that, he has really no movement at all. And the strangest thing of all, going back to my first meeting with Stephen, the strangest thing of all is how can somebody who is so physically incapacitated be so much in control? One quickly feels dominated by Stephen Hawking. He's a person who, in the end, does not seem disadvantaged.
Let me ask you about the way you go about making a film. And it was certainly true in this particular film. You built a set, a rather elaborate set, for the interviews that you did with Stephen Hawking's family and his colleagues. Do you feel you lose anything by bringing people to this established set that you might get if you had them in their own home?
Well, for a long time, I've had a number of beliefs about nonfiction filmmaking. What makes a nonfiction film as opposed to a film with actors? And I've tried to play with those ideas in every film that I've made. Certainly, The Thin Blue Line tried to play on ideas about fantasy, self-deception in the real world. But what is essential to me is the way people talk, extemporaneous conversation, what people say when they're given the license to say virtually anything they choose. The element of reality in my films comes from those conversations. And apart from whether or not it's in someone's real living room or on a stage, those conversations are very much real. These are the real people in Stephen Hawking's life.
So as a filmmaker, you're really much more interested in what people say than how a particular film looks.
I'm very concerned how it looks, but less concerned about the idea that a nonfiction film has to be, for example, like cinema verite, that it has to have handheld camera available light, that a nonfiction film can be as elaborately constructed, stage lit as a dramatic feature.
I notice you're avoiding the word documentary. You're saying instead nonfiction film.
Although I'm happy to use the word documentary as well.
But it sounds like you're trying to say something by not using the word documentary and by using the word nonfiction film.
I think that documentary has so many associations built into it. That term. And I am fascinated with the idea of creating a different kind of nonfiction filmmaking, if you like documentary filmmaking, that breaks some of what we take to be the rules, the established rules of how a documentary or a nonfiction film is put together.
Errol Morris is my guest, and he's just completed his latest film called A Brief History of Time, and it was inspired by Stephen Hawking's book about some of the ideas that he had about the cosmos. Stephen Hawking is a well-known scientist who has ALS. It's a degenerative disease, muscle disease, and we're going to take a short break. This is Fresh Air. Filmmaker Errol Morris is my guest. Let me ask you about your style of interviewing and how you get people to reveal something about themselves. My understanding is that you do sit out the silences. As you said, you were comfortable talking with Stephen Hawking because you're used to sitting through silences. Do you find as an interviewer that people want, there's a kind of a natural tendency to fill up those silences, and that's when people begin to reveal themselves?
Yes, I do. Years ago, before I even started work as a filmmaker, before I made my first film, Gates of Heaven, I interviewed people on audio tape. And my goal was to keep these interviews going for as long as possible without saying anything.
So does that mean you're using your eyes, your body in some way to encourage someone to keep going?
I'm not sure how it works, but I know that I've often thought the important thing, if you want to have someone talking and if you want to keep them talking for as long as possible, the important thing is not to listen to what they say. The important thing is to look like you're listening to what they say.
So what are you listening to?
The strange thing is when you start listening to what people say, often you become distracted. You react to what they say. You give them visual clues that make them want to stop and ask you questions. Whereas if you devote yourself wholeheartedly just simply to looking at them and wishing them to continue, often they oblige you by going on.
Did you have to learn how to keep quiet? Because, of course, the tendency is to fill in those silences and to be encouraging with one's own words as an interviewer.
Well, I try to make up for my silences during my interviews with people by talking as much as possible at other times.
So that's it encourages them then to trust you, that you'll be with them.
I think I'm a receptive audience. I know that all of the people that I've ever interviewed, I've liked them on some level.
Is that important?
I think that it is important to have a connection with the people that you're interviewing, or somehow it's a dead enterprise.
You're working on a new film called Six Stories.
Yes.
Is that right? And part of
the title changes on a daily basis.
So it's Six Stories today?
Perhaps Five Stories tomorrow.
Okay. But you have introduced a new piece of machinery called an Interitron.
Yes.
And what it does is allows, or I guess forces, the person that you're interviewing to look directly into the camera.
Yes.
How does it work?
Well, the Interitron was named by my wife, Julia. I've often been bothered by the fact, when I interview somebody, or at least in the past when I have interviewed somebody, I put my head directly against the lens of the camera. Sometimes I put my arm around the camera so that my head is as close to the lens as possible. If you know where to look, you can actually see my hair drifting into the corner of the frame from time to time. And my cameramen have to grab the back of my head and pull me back to keep me from going further in front of the lens. But I've often been bothered by the fact that when people are talking to me, they are still not looking directly into the lens. They are looking off to the left or off to the right. And so I developed this new device, the Interitron.
Sounds ominous, you know.
which, for better or worse, I've now trademarked, which puts a half-silvered mirror, it's essentially a teleprompter, in front of the lens with my image on it, my live image on it. The person being interviewed looks at my image and, in fact, is looking directly into the lens of the camera. And I am seated off to the side in a booth looking at the exact same sort of contraption, that half-silvered mirror, this time with the subject's image on it that comes from the video tap of the camera and a camera directly behind that half-silvered image, that half-silvered mirror that takes my image and puts it on their mirror in front of the other camera. It's the difference between what I call the faux first person and the true first person. That when someone is looking directly at you, that this is true first person cinema. And it's paid off.
Filmmaker Errol Morris. His new film, A Brief History of Time, is about physicist Stephen Hawking. It opens in New York and Los Angeles on August 21st. This is Fresh Air.